Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Summer is upon us, and we all know what that means. Lots of summertime fun. Spend at the lake, by the pool, or off on adventures to your favorite waterfall or floating down the river. Servicing your vehicle is last on the list, but we all know it has to be done. Let Premier Oil Change save you time and money with their easy drive-in service. No appointment needed. Wait in the comfort of your own car, enjoy a cold beverage, and before you know it, you'll be off to your next summertime adventure, knowing that your car is summertime ready. Earn reward points for every dollar you spend, which can be redeemed for an oil change, additional services, and other great rewards. With free fluid top-offs, free check engine light inspections, free Wi-Fi, and a free car wash, you are sure to leave refreshed. Stop into a Premier Oil Change near you today. Visit them in Palisadro in the Holiday Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard near Waterworks Park. And don't forget Anderson across from Round Table Pizza. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
These are unprecedented times. Challenging how the YMCA works to strengthen community as we have for nearly 170 years. But we've always found ways to help people and communities in times of crisis. Right now, Ys across the country are providing emergency child care, shelter, food programs, and outreach to seniors. But we can't do it alone. Whether you're connected to the Y or have a fond Y memory, we need you to stay with us. Reach out to your local Y today and stay with us for a better us.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. In response to COVID-19, NFI has scheduled online Zoom classroom sessions for CCW and CCW renewal. These online courses will be followed up with live fire range training, which will complete your certification. Follow-on range training is done with the same great instructors you've come to know and love. Give us a call today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed, a show on every other Sunday at 8 in the morning. Come check out my music and the deep thought, and let me shatter your paradigm.
Let's keep it 100. Them traitors think they won, but them patriots coming. You fall for anything if you don't stand for something. Some people say it's time to fight, but ain't about nothing, yeah. And I only bout it, God can't bout it, nothing else. Yeah, it's time to fight. And it don't matter if you're black or white. And I know it's gonna take some sacrifice.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
Jazz up your weekend breakfast or brunch at Black Bear Diner with a sparkling mimosa made with our fresh-squeezed orange juice and Prosecco. It's a delicious and refreshing sidekick to your favorite omelet, Benedict, or pancake breakfast. At lunch or dinner, add a glass of red or white Kendall Jackson family wines, or choose a domestic, import, or specialty beer to ride along with your favorite entree. Serve daily at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today's review is Michelef Grande Bold, a classic Maduro stick with a rich, dark, oily Ecuadorian broadleaf wrapper surrounding Nicaragua's best tobacco. Full-bodied and full flavor, your palate will delight with hints of dark chocolate, nuts, and cedar. Come down to the best cigar shop around, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wing Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51. Jefferson,
state of mind. 100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Today, Simpson University continues to provide a Christ-centered education, graduating students with mature and infectious faith, critical competence, and a ready spirit to thrive as servant leaders around the world and at our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
You could be writing the book that changes your life. Brandon Sanderson.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses. Today we are continuing our series on frequently asked questions by you, the listeners, and questions that we see recur often in forums worldwide.
Today's question is, what makes a book unforgettable? What makes a book impactful?
so much of this is subjective, and it comes down to understanding not only your audience, but yourself. What's going to impact you as the author, as our opener implied, but also understanding your audience. Because if the book is a romance, it will not impact me at all.
But you don't read romance for a reason. So know your audience is the first key, and know your genre. We'll be talking a little bit more about knowing your genre later this month, but let's get into how to make a book impactful. First off, think of your favorite book. Why is it your favorite? Is it the plot? Is it the style of writing? Or is it connection?
The book that comes to mind right now is my favorite because it entertained me in a way that I connected with. There was an emotional connection there between myself and the main character whom I have nothing in common with, but I felt that character and the problem that they were trying to overcome in a way that I internalized as a reader.
And that is the first key to making a book impactful. You have to have some kind of emotional connection with it. It doesn't have to be love. It doesn't have to be the romance side of it, but what does your audience connect with to create that emotion? The biggest thing is that you need to have a real character. Your characters need to be relatable. They feel real emotions, real struggles, things that even though we have nothing in common with them, they live in a completely different world, a completely different universe. We can still see that character and say, I understand them.
The book that comes to mind right now, the main character was basically wiped blank mentally, and they reinstalled a bunch of programming to make him the ultimate CIA agent. He still has this not only moral quandary about what's right and wrong outside of his programming, but this struggle for identity. And a lot of the problem is solved once he figures out who he is outside of his programming.
And the one thing you need to avoid when trying to create that emotional connection with the reader through your characters is perfection. Readers do not connect with perfection because it is unattainable. They can never see a perfect character and say, I know what that feels like because I am also perfect. Another way to make sure your book has impact is to know yourself whether you are writing for art or whether you are writing for entertainment.
There is a lot of overlap in these two circles of art and entertainment, but the way I define it is art is something you as the audience invest in some way, and then entertainment is just everyone ingests it the same way. Everyone solves the puzzle the same way. Everyone watches the Marvel movie the same way. Art should be a connection to the audience. You understand that piece of art differently than I do.
I will read a book once for entertainment, and then I will read it again to appreciate it as art. Art is why I read Brandon Sanderson novels, because there's so much depth there that I can immerse myself into the world, the characters, the settings.
So art changes you on the other side.
Yes. So let's go on to the next way to make a book have impact. If you want your readers to feel impact from the book, they need to learn something. This applies to fiction as well as nonfiction. A lot of nonfiction is out there to teach a lesson specifically, tell you how to do something, give you instruction, self-help, whatever. Fiction, though, there are other ways to teach people something. In this process, for a reader to learn something, they need to learn something about themselves. They need to learn something about the other. They need to learn something about the world. You can do this by showing different point of views, not actually writing from different point of views, but showing us what it is like to live with a disability, what it's like to live with depression, what it's like to live with whatever, and show people a different way of life. How many times have you read a book when you're not feeling that great in your life and you see the challenges this character overcomes because you lived that life with them? At the end, you go, I can deal with my life because they dealt with that and I lived with them through it.
Going back to the making sure your characters aren't perfect, if your character doesn't struggle with this, your reader won't either. Your character should fail at leaving the abusive relationship so that when they finally succeed, there's that triumph and there's a victory there that the readers can relate to. They can feel that and maybe have the courage to leave their own abusive relationship if that's where they are.
And in general, make the readers think about something, anything, if you want to have that deep artistic impact that we're talking about.
It was actually a theater teacher tell me that he would 1,000 times prefer somebody to hate his work than to be bored by it. Being bored is the worst sin you can have in the entertainment world. And that's something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. If you've ever read the Lord Foulsbane collection, about halfway through that first book, you want to throw it against a window and walk away because you are so annoyed, and I wanted to strangle the main character. If I could reach through a book and affect my character's lives in some way, it wouldn't be to hug a character and go, there, it's okay. It would be to strangle that character. I hated it, but it sticks in my mind. I was not bored by it.
And that goes back to the emotion. Make them feel something. Make them think about something. It can be anything, but they need to have some kind of response.
That doesn't mean you need to preach at your readers.
Oh, please don't.
Please don't.
Unless you're writing something faith-based or are a reverend of some kind writing a sermon in a novel, you don't need a moral of the story.
I would say even then, if it's fiction, avoid that. You can have a side character who has this particular philosophy, and that's a character trait, great. But preaching at the reader will get them to close it basically every time. The moment they realize they're being preached at, they're not going to want to continue. I would say the exception there is younger than 12 or so.
A lot of those books are designed to teach the kid how to be a better person. And because kids aren't very good with subtle ideas, a lot of those stories are very blunt. Of, this is how you do this thing, this is how you be a good person, through teaching them with birds or animals of some kind.
Invest in your future, Three Little Pigs.
And as we mentioned at the beginning, you really do need to keep your target audience in mind. As we've discussed, we look for different connections in books. I look for those characters. I look for the struggles, the things that I want to understand because I don't experience it personally, but I know people who do. Reading those struggles helps me broaden my mind. I love that learning and I love the emotional connection from it. But sometimes I just want to be entertained.
Escaping from the world is a fantastic and beautiful thing. Wishing that life were different, you as an entertainer, as an author, are providing that, and sometimes that escape is all they need.
If you have people reading a cozy romance story, like people who watch Hallmark holiday movies, they're not looking for deep, complicated plot. They're not looking for that. They're looking for the emotional connection. If your target audience is somebody who reads memoirs, they're looking for that personal story, that deeply personal story that shows someone in real life overcoming a challenge.
I know people will argue with me on this particular fact, but I think a lot of action becomes incredibly philosophical. because there's this debate of the value of life versus morals. Is it okay to kill this person and not this person because this one's a bad guy and this one's a good guy? This internal struggle that a lot of action characters have is deciding how we interact with other people, and in a lot of ways, delivering a kind of moral justice, a philosophical fairness to the scene, with lots of punches and kicks and bam, bam.
With a lot of entertainment along the way.
So I have to ask you, which book on the shelves that I can go to Amazon and buy right now, which book has affected you the most?
My own book. Just like our quote at the beginning said, you could be writing the book that changes your life.
Ted Dekker, in the same way we say write selfishly, he says write to discover. He's saying ask yourself these questions and then figure out the answer by writing the book.
Learn about yourself through learning about your world and your characters.
Your characters will teach you more than any school teacher ever has. More than Lee or I ever could in our hours upon hours of podcasting. Your characters have so much to tell you, but they can't say anything until you
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Talent is cheaper than table salt. What separates the talented individual from the successful one is a lot of hard work. Stephen King.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Sorry if my sound sounds a little bit off today. I am unable to make it to the studio to do recordings for the first little bit in January. But happy 2021.
Yay!
We are starting a new year. We've got a new theme for you this month. And this month we are covering the Pearls from the Masters.
Each episode we're going to be covering a different master of the craft and different advice that they give. So if you really like the openers of every episode we've done so far, this month is for you because it's a lot of that.
So a lot of people will always go to one book in particular if they're learning how to write. And that book is On Writing by Stephen King. So our first master that we're going to cover this month is Stephen King. He is very good at what he does. There's a reason why he basically defined an entire genre.
I think most people are at least familiar with his work in some regard.
If you aren't, you probably at least know of works like It, Pet Sematary, Carrie. Those were all from the creations of Stephen King.
So if you missed our last episode, last Thursday was December 31st, the frequently asked question that we covered was, how do I learn? And we offered some questions about how to analyze advice and feedback. That is going to be our format going forward through this month. And those questions are, do I agree with the advice being given? What evidence do I have that supports or defies that advice?
Do I share a target audience with the person giving the advice? And why am I getting this advice? Are they preaching to the choir, or does this challenge my status quo?
And how much do I value this person's opinion?
And the final question is, why have they given said advice before?
So our opener started with, talent is cheaper than table salt. Do you agree?
I don't know if I agree with that one. I think mostly what I see is underdeveloped writers. Yes, there are people with some natural talent in writing, but I've also seen quite a few with natural talent that do nothing with it. So I think I do get what he's saying here, is if you have the talent and do nothing with it, it really doesn't matter, so it has the value of table salt.
And I think that kind of goes into the next quote. If you don't have time to read, you don't have the time or the tools to write. Simple as that.
This one is so important. I most definitely agree with this, and I know you do too, because you can't learn the instincts of writing without having read it.
This one I kind of feel like preaches to the choir a little bit, because people who don't read while they're writing aren't going to listen to this advice. I don't know of anybody who writes incredibly well that reads nothing.
Yeah, I agree with that. This one is definitely preaching to the choir, because if you aren't reading while you're trying to write, how much are you actually going to read advice in general?
Yeah, that's kind of true for all of the advice we're looking at.
So the next quote is, the road to hell is paved with adverbs. I know your opinion on this.
Yeah, it was about a year ago I very adamantly stated that I disagree with this one. I understand why it's said, but it's not actually adverbs that are the problem here. So yes, this challenges my status quo. No, I do not agree with it whatsoever.
But are you willing to listen to it and try to apply its intention to your writing, even if you like to still use adverbs?
Its intention is to eliminate redundancy, which I do strive for in my writing. So I will accept that one, yes.
And that little exercise right there is something that you, our listeners, can do as you're trying to improve writing. Even if you don't particularly like the advice, or if it challenges what you think is right, can you still pull something from it to help you improve or to see that you're on the right path as a writer? So our next quote is a bit of a long one, but stick with it, it's worth it. The most important things are the hardest to say. They are the things you get ashamed of because words diminish them. Words shrink things that seemed limitless when they were in your head to no more than living size when they're brought out. But it's more than that, isn't it? The most important things lie too close to wherever your secret heart is buried. Like landmarks to a treasure your enemies would love to steal away. And you may make revelations that cost you dearly, only to have people look at you in a funny way, not understanding what you've said at all. Or why you thought it was so important that you almost cried while you were saying it. That's the worst, I think, when the secret stays locked within, not for want of a teller, but for want of an understanding ear.
I think this really touches on a lot of authors' biggest fears. The pouring your heart into something, that writing selfishly, that emotional connection with your writing, and no one on the other side cares at all. If you're invested, that's when the great writing happens, and that's when it's most difficult to get on the page.
When I read through writing forums and writing groups, I have more than once come across somebody post wondering how they can get their significant other, their family, their friends, to read and enjoy their books. And they all sound so heartbroken that no one close to them cares about what they're doing. It's hard, and like this quote says, it is scary, but the worst thing you can do is keep it locked away because you can't find someone close to you that will listen.
Someone out there needs to hear what you have to say. And they never will if you can't put it on the page.
Or sometimes it's just you that needs to put it down. Even if no one else reads it, that's what matters, is that you're doing it for you because you have that story that you need to get out.
on a little bit lighter note, this next quote is definitely one that I think more developed authors will totally cheer and raise their hands and agree with, but it's quite vexing to new authors, and they don't quite understand how this works. Description begins in the writer's imagination, but it should finish in the reader's.
I love this bit of advice. Personally, I agree with it. You can create this beautiful world, you can put the descriptions down on paper, but the readers will be the ones to visualize it.
I think as an author, this can challenge some people to not feed everything to your reader. I think that's what a lot of authors can take away from this particular quote, is you don't have to define the exact calendar system of this fantasy realm. You can leave some of that world building in your reader's imagination, and they will be that much more invested because of it. This next quote is definitely something that I've considered using for an opener and probably will again sometime soon when we talk about short stories. This quote is, "A short story is a different thing altogether. A short story is like a quick kiss in the dark from a stranger." I definitely agree with this one. So many people want to cram an entire novel into a short story and get the character's backstory in, make sure we understand the map and the this and the that. We don't have time for that. We just need a quick kiss in the dark.
This one challenges my status quo, personally. I understand the need to make it short, to make it quick, that I don't need all of the backstories there. But I also want to build big worlds in a short story. And that's something that I'm working on because I do know this advice is good and I need to apply it, but it's a challenge. Our next quote is, "Fiction is the truth inside the lie." What do you think of this quote?
I wonder if that's why we're all drawn to fiction in a way. If there's a truth, that internal discovery, that character's value that they learn to see in themselves, whatever it is that the characters are overcoming, we want to see it. And that truth is what gets you and your audience connected to each other.
Even if you are just writing a mystery novel, your fiction can tell the truth of humankind, of the good and the bad. And that's a lot of what fiction does, is shows us people, real people, as they actually are, even though the characters are completely fictional.
Stephen King has a lot to say when it comes to the craft, when it comes to writing, but I do want to leave you with this last quote, which is, "Write with the door closed, rewrite with the door open," which of course basically means
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
I will put you, the writer, behind the wheel of the squad car, walking a beat, investigating crime scenes, and sitting behind a desk writing reports. So, put on your Sam Brown belt, strap on your vest, and let's go experience what cops do and learn why they do it. Patrick O'Donnell.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Holt.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Continuing our series with people with advanced skills, we are getting into law enforcement, a very common character in a lot of genres. So our guest today is Patrick O'Donnell. Welcome. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we know you wrote this opening quote, and that came from your book, Cops and Writers. How long have you been in law enforcement?
Okay. I just retired February 21st of this year from law enforcement. I retired as a police sergeant in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, after 25 years of service.
Wow.
presently 55 years of age, so that's about typical across the nation. To give your listeners some context, Milwaukee is a city of about 600,000 people. There's about 1,800 law enforcement sworn members, which means they have arrest powers. And out of that 1,800, there's about 200 sergeants. I was one of them. I was a street sergeant, so I spent all of my career on the streets.
You wrote a book called Cops and Writers. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. The first book is Cops and Writers, From the Academy to the Streets. I'm an independently published author. That was the fourth book that I've written. I was in the middle of the second post-apocalyptic book, and I was getting deeper and deeper into the weeds in self-publishing and going to conferences, getting to know people. And inevitably, it's always, what do you do for a living? What's your day job? And I tell them, and they had just a plethora of questions. And I said, yeah, you should really just start consulting with authors, and you should be writing books about this. So I scrapped the post-apocalyptic book, and I wrote this book. I also started a Facebook group to see if there was interest in it before I invested too much time or money into this project. And the results were fantastic. People were very open to it. I've helped a lot of writers kind of write their way through maybe some plot holes or just does that really happen kind of questions. So now I just sent off the second book in the Cops and Writers series, and that's going to be Crime Scenes and Investigations. And hopefully that'll be out in September. That's what I'm shooting for.
Oh, that is awesome. And let me just say, I am part of this Facebook group, and it is fantastic.
Well, I'm glad. That makes me very happy.
So what do you see that really works well and drives you up the wall?
Most of it doesn't work well, and most of it does drive me up a wall. My wife loves shows like, you know, Hawaii Five-0, you know, all the different spin-offs of CSI. And most of them are far, far from reality. You know, it's entertainment. I guess it's not very exciting to watch a cop or a detective do 8 hours or 10 hours worth of reports after a 5-minute chase. And that's the reality of it. There was one TV show that I thought was pretty spot on, and that was Southland. What I liked about that show was it got the gallows sense of humor. It got the banter between the cops. And it really showed the human side of things that a lot of TV shows and movies, you know, it seems like it's one extreme or another. Some of the things that really drives me crazy is most of police work that's done, that's exciting, quote unquote, is done by police officers on the street. It's not detectives. Detectives usually show up after the fact. This is funny. We tease them sometimes. We used to call them third responders. But no, you decide to show up. That's nice. But the breaking down the doors, the car chases, the stuff that gets notoriety and the highest amount of liability are the first responders, the cops on the street. Say like a homicide detective. You see that a lot on TV and in movies. They respond when there's somebody that just committed a homicide. Sometimes that could be a half an hour to an hour after the police officers show up on the scene. Then a sergeant's going to show up on the scene. That's what I did. And you quickly try to maintain control of the crime scene. You set up a perimeter. That's when the yellow tape goes up that everybody is familiar with.
If there is one concept that you could make everyone understand about law enforcement, what would it be?
I would try to humanize it as much as possible. Police officers, detectives, sergeants, lieutenants, captains, etc., they're all human beings, and we're all flawed. I think they do a fabulous job, and literally you have under a second to make sometimes life and death decisions, and I can't think of any other job that's like that. They're human beings. They're professionals. They are flawed. There's all kinds of problems, just like anybody else. It's funny because law enforcement's a melting pot. You have people from every kind of walk of life you can think of that becomes a cop, and use that.
You mentioned earlier the gallows humor of a lot of that type of environment. What other types of speech, lingo, or whatever, can people embed in their stories that would be accurate to the law enforcement profession?
Oh, boy. The gallows humor is a big one. I would be careful as far as using, like, cop lingo in your books because it can be very specific to department and region of the country. Some are very formal, some are informal. Personally, if I was going to write a story about, say, a detective or a police officer or whatever your story is, maybe an avatar city might be your best bet.
Okay.
And model it after a specific city, but you wouldn't name it as, you know, like Milwaukee Police Department. It could be Metro City Police Department or whatever.
In your quote, you said, put on your Sam Brown belt. What is that?
That's the technical name for the gun belt. Most people refer to it as a gun belt that are not in law enforcement.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that law enforcement is a melting pot with personalities, backgrounds, everything like that. However, there is still a certain mindset that most police officers need to have for the job. How can a writer portray that in their stories?
I guess the best way to explain it is when I worked nights for 17 years. I worked a big chunk of that midnight to 8 o'clock in the morning in some of the most violent areas of the city. I mean, I was literally surrounded by gunfire every night. And most of the people we dealt with were either intoxicated, you know, by alcohol or other drugs. They were having the worst day of their life. And usually that's when they would call us. Or somebody else would call and say, hey, I think that guy shot on the sidewalk over there, you know, that type of thing. What I always told my cops is there's a lot of people in these neighborhoods that really like us and they want us here. You just have to see past all the negativity. Then in the latter years of my career, I worked day shift and there's more people out there that are just normal people. Something bad happened to them and they would call us. You can find common ground with some of these people, and now your faith in humanity starts to slowly restore, because it's really hard to get beat over the head night after night after night, like I said, and you forget sometimes that there's decent people in these areas that need our help, and they're very friendly, and they want us there.
So a good police officer really needs to have a little bit of an optimist in them.
Yes, because if you ask a cop, why did you become a cop? Most of them are going to say to help people. I know that sounds corny, and honest to God, that's really why they became cops. They want to help people, and 99.9% of the time, they do. But the gallows humor, to circle back to that, that's a coping mechanism. Firefighters are the same exact way. Sometimes they're worse. Anybody that's in a high-stress situation where you're surrounded by death on a regular basis.
One of the things that we advise our listeners to do is to make friends with somebody in the profession. If I have zero contacts in law enforcement, where would you suggest I start?
Well, you could start with me. I'll be your friend. You could also, if you want to be specific, like say where you live, if you want like face-to-face connection, not every department, but a lot of departments, especially big city departments, have a PIO. That's a public information officer. They might be able to help you. A lot of police departments have what they call a citizens academy, where citizens can go through an abbreviated police academy. But like I said before, there's police officers in my group. Another good group is the Writers Detective Bureau that Adam Richards runs. And there is a retired FBI special agent that's also in my group. Her name is Jerry Williams. She wrote a book called FBI Myths and Misconceptions, A Manual for Armchair Detectives.
Do you have any final bits of advice you want to embed on our listeners as we head out?
When you're writing about law enforcement, I guess I will reiterate, if you're going to be writing about a specific department, do your due diligence. Some things that writers get wrong on a pretty consistent basis is rank. We all start out as police officers. And then from there, you can branch out either into patrol or investigations.
One thing I'll add is that there is a difference between a police officer and a deputy. They do the same job, but if you call a deputy a police officer or a police officer a deputy, sometimes they get a little not happy.
Yeah, and the state troopers. You know, they don't appreciate when you call them officer, but in California they're called officers, so I guess it all depends where you're at.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Patrick, for joining us today.
again, for our listeners, you can find him on Facebook with the Facebook group Cops and Writers, also by his book by the same name.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
And for all of you listeners, if there's one thing that you can take away, it's do your research, take the time. Law enforcement officers are people too, but when you are writing, just make sure you are always writing
selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Wherever the art of medicine is loved, there is also a love of humanity. Hippocrates.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Joining us today is Lorraine Woodworth, a nurse. Welcome, Lorraine.
How do you do? Nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
All right. I am a registered nurse, and I started in the 90s in Reading. And for some very odd reason, I've always been fascinated with surgical procedures that alter our functions in some way that have to be adapted, and wounds, and things that a lot of people may not be particularly interested in, but it's always fascinated me. So after I finished my bachelor's degree at Chico State, I went on to get a certification in wounds, ostomies, and continence. So that's my area that I function in, and now I'm a hospice nurse. That's kind of the way I've done. I'm semi-retired, but I still do work.
So in a lot of popular media, there's this certain idea of what a nurse is. You know, people will picture the TV shows. How much of that would you say is true?
Well, nursing is one of those most highly respected professions. Statistically, when they do tests or surveys of who you trust, who you don't trust, there are people who will trust their nurse over their doctor. The best nurses, I think, are people who really love the science of it, the interaction with human beings, and the ability to help people. And those that are just punching the clock for a job, well, you know, they're in every line of work, even your doctors and people like that.
So there's this idea that all nurses are kind, gentle, loving, caring kind of characters who are very sensitive souls. Do you find that
no.
to be accurate?
Anybody that knows me knows that's not true. I'm sorry. No, not every nurse is. No, not every human being is. It's a tremendous cross-section of humanity is in the nursing profession.
I feel like it would be a lot like police work or fire work of sometimes they start out being bright and hopeful, but over time with all of the things they deal with, they get a little jaded when it comes to optimism in the world.
Well, a lot of that depends on what area of nursing you're in. In my own personal experience, and that's all I have to go by, people that work in emergency, those are the people that are going to see all kinds of negative aspects of humanity. People that work in surgical floors, you know, they deal with medical doctors and post-operative. Everybody has a different job. I think that some people have a gallows type of humor, and they'll see funny in things that other people would shiver at. But I don't think it's intended to be mean or nasty. It's just you have to in some way protect yourself from some of the things that you see. But I've never met a nurse that's deliberately mean or is totally indifferent to the suffering of people. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'd last very long.
So I didn't realize before, and I feel terrible about this now, that there are different kinds of nurses in one hospital.
So let's take the emergency room, for instance. Those nurses are at a specific level of emergency, just stop bleeding, restore breathing. This is what we need to do right immediately. On another floor, there we call med-surg, a medical unit. People have come in being sick, or they've just had surgery, and they're having a rather normal recovery or an expected recovery. But that nurse will be specially experienced in taking care of antibiotics and hanging the medicines and watching for reactions to the medicines, looking for infections in the wound, making sure that whatever was sewn up stays sewn up, all those kinds of things. In an ortho floor, an orthopedic surgery floor, you have to know about all kinds of different equipment that people come in with, tractions, and they're all hung differently with things to keep a leg that's been broken in place. I mean, every single floor in a hospital has a specific type of patient that they're dealing with. And then, you know, like you get a person like me, for instance, when I worked in the hospital, if I was working as a wound and ostomy nurse, ostomy means opening external mouth to outside the body, and the word before that or the preface is whatever part of the body has been made into an ostomy. Mm-hmm. You've got the person that needs to be fitted with the appliance, and for it to work, you have to educate them. Or if they have a wound, you just do rounds all day with people that have wounds and come up with treatment plans for them. So there's dialysis nurses, nurses that specialize in kidney dialysis. That's a very specific skill and job. I mean, those are just a few of the things mm-hmm. that different nurses are skilled and trained to do.
So for an author, it's very important to, if they have a nurse character, what kind of nurse are they going to be in the story? What
exactly.
do they need to know specifically?
Right. Well, for instance, if you have a character in your writing that has a gunshot wound, the nurse can't be a labor and delivery nurse. I didn't even get into that. You want the nurse that knows what to do when a person comes in with a gunshot wound and have had experience. You know that they're going to need x-ray, they're going to need blood, they're going to need all these things. And so you would expect your character and the nurse in that position to have certain levels of skill. Yeah, you got to know what kind of nurse they are.
So we did have a listener have a question for you. The question is, how would diabetes affect a character dying from an infection? I believe this character is writing a post-apocalyptic kind of story where antibiotics aren't readily available.
Oh, well, a diabetic person, if anybody's blood sugar gets to be over 150, the white blood cells do not function efficiently to go after infection. When an infection presents itself, the body itself sets up a defense. And to make it just as simple as possible, when a person has diabetes, their blood is more like syrup than water. The white blood cells can't get to the bacteria in order to break them down and destroy them. So if you don't have artificial antibiotics, then the body is not going to be able to fight its own infection.
Okay.
So get the fluids down and get the blood sugar as normal as you can possibly get it.
Interesting.
But a post-apocalyptic, you're not going to have blood sugar medicines either.
Yeah. So do you have any stories that you could share with us that might represent what you do for the authors that are listening?
One of the things that I tell is that you learn from your patients as well. I had a patient, an old man. He wasn't in the hospital for this particular problem. He was sick with something else, and he had an ostomy. I was trying to show him how to do it, kind of, you know, I've been to school, I know how to do this kind of stuff. And he looked at me and he said, young lady, you don't know what you're doing. If you want to do this as a job, you better learn to listen to the people you're taking care of. So sit down and let me show you something. And I was like, okay. I will learn from this old man. Another story of the ostomy thing. I had a lady who...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.